Our last case of the morning is the State of Ohio versus Eric Qualls. For the appellant, we have Ms. Mahusik.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Kelly Mahusik, and I represent defendant appellant Eric Qualls. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The reason why we're here today is that in March of 2010, the trial court chose to depart from this court's binding authority, and rather than conducting a de novo resentencing hearing to which Mr. Qualls was entitled to, issued a non-proton judgment entry that added post-release control. As this court has repeatedly stated, to properly impose post-release control, there are two components. First, the trial court must impose post-release control at the sentencing hearing. It must state the term of post-release control and whether that term is mandatory. Second, the trial court must actually impose that post-release control in the judgment entry. The failure to abide by either one of those two steps renders the post-release control void. The inclusion in the judgment entry of that post-release control is crucial for three reasons. First, the adult parole authority is powerless to supervise somebody on post-release control without an order properly authorizing the supervision, as this court recognized in Jordan. Second, the trial court speaks only through its journal entry. And third, 2967-28 states that post-release control shall be included as part of a defendant's sentence, and the failure to include that post-release control renders that sentence void. The non-proton judgment entries can be used to correct clerical errors. They can also be used to conform a judgment entry to state what actually occurred at the sentencing hearing. But in the post-release control context, non-proton judgment entries are treated differently. As this court recognized in its discussion of non-proton judgment entries in Mossmeyer in the Bloomer decision, as well as in Ketterer, and as the General Assembly recognized in 2929-191, that to use a non-proton judgment entry to correct a judgment entry, there must first be a resentencing hearing. Resentencing hearing did not take place in this case. Moreover, this court in Singleton recognized in the lead opinion that a judgment entry can't be used to make something valid if it was void at its inception. Mr. Qualls filed his motion for resentencing in January 2010. At that time, under Jordan from 2004, Bezac from 2007, Simpkins from 2008, and Bloomer from 2009, Mr. Qualls was entitled to that de novo resentencing hearing. The court had no reason to depart from that longstanding authority. For that reason, we ask that Mr. Qualls' case be remanded to the trial court for the proper imposition of post-release control. If this court has no questions, I would like to reserve whatever time I have.
I do have a question.
Sure.
Would this be a resentencing on the post-release control only, or is this an entirely de novo resentencing with everything on the table?
This would be a de novo resentencing with everything on the table. Fisher didn't come out until December 2010, and Mr. Qualls filed his motion for resentencing in January of 2010. At that time, there was no fair warning that Mr. Qualls could lose the right to de novo resentencing. In fact, the law at that time, the most recent decision was Singleton, issued in December 2009, which said that the right to a full resentencing hearing was not retroactive under 2929-191. So therefore, there was no warning to give Mr. Qualls the idea that he would not be entitled to the de novo resentencing hearing, and due process does not allow the limited resentencing in this case.
Go ahead.
How many defendants are in the position of Mr. Qualls? Do you know?
I do not know. It's a rather limited class of cases, though, because July 11, 2006, 2929-191 became effective. Moreover, in many of the cases where there wasn't a non-proton, if there was another mistake in the post-release control imposition, such as the court's failure to advise at the sentencing hearing, I believe in most of those cases, a full resentencing has already occurred.
So because the change has been, in a sense, to the detriment of a defendant's receiving a full resentencing, you're saying that Mr. Qualls, having had his case filed beforehand ought to get the benefit of the full resentencing.
Correct. A judicial decision cannot be retroactive unless there is fair warning of that retroactivity. And there was nothing here to indicate that Mr. Qualls would not be entitled to that de novo resentencing. Moreover, there are several rights associated with the de novo resentencing which aren't implicated in a limited resentencing. And so by not applying the de novo resentencing here, Mr. Qualls wasn't able to appeal or to have counsel present or to object to that in his full abilities, so
he
was harmed.
But he'd be appealing for the second time. So under your argument with the de novo resentencing, it starts the appellate clock running all over again. Is that your argument?
No, we're not making, that was Fisher. We're not arguing that Mr. Qualls is entitled to a new appeal as of right. What we're stating is that Mr. Qualls was entitled to a de novo resentencing where his entire sentence is allowed to be examined and that this action should be remanded for that so that post-release control can be properly imposed at that time as well as entire sentence reevaluated.
What did Mr. Qualls get the maximum sentence already? Has he received a maximum sentence here?
Yes, he has.
All right, so there's no possibility that he could be resentenced to a higher sentence.
Correct.
Which then would possibly, as Justice Brown talks about, raise the issue of potential appeal. That's not going to be a problem here.
That is not an issue in this case.
So presumably he'll be remanded, if you prevail, receive the same sentence, and have post-release control admonishment, and that established, correct?
Correct. And if there are any errors in the imposition of post-release control, he could appeal that portion of the non-proton judgment entry at that time.
He's in prison for 33 years?
He received a 33 years to life sentence. He'll be eligible for parole in 2035.
And what application do you see is our decision in Fisher to Mr. Qualls' situation?
Fisher addressed whether or not a defendant received a new appeal as of right from the resentencing entry. In that regard, we're not arguing that Mr. Qualls is to receive a new appeal as of right. We're arguing that he is to receive a de novo resentencing hearing. Fisher limited cases issued after December 2010 that if somebody filed a motion in January of 2011 asking for a resentencing because post-release control wasn't properly imposed, they would only receive a limited resentencing hearing. And those defendants have fair notice of the change in the law. In this case, Mr. Qualls filed his in January of 2010 and the court issued its decision in March of 2010. At that time, he was entitled to the de novo resentencing. So Fisher does not affect Mr. Qualls' rights.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Beza Fransman?
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Amanda Beza Fransman. I'm the Assistant County Prosecutor for Meigs County, representing Colleen Williams, the Meigs County Prosecutor. The issue in this case was correctly stated by opposing counsel, appellant's counsel. The issue is whether the nunk-pro-tunk entry was proper or whether a de novo sentencing hearing was required. Our position is that the nunk-pro-tunk was proper and that Mr. Qualls was not entitled to resentencing.
Counsel, do you have any idea in response to, I believe, Justice Lanziger's question, how many defendants are caught in this very limited window of, with regards to the post-release control sentencing issue?
I only know out of our county, Your Honor, and actually Mr. Qualls is the only one out of our county. I did review several oral arguments throughout this court from Cuyahoga County, and they seem to have many. I think a lot of it would depend on your county. A county such as Franklin, Cuyahoga, Summit, you're gonna have a lot more, but in our county, there is only Mr. Qualls. There's three reasons why we believe that the nunk-pro-tunk was proper in this case. First, it was correcting a clerical error, and I am going to go back through and explain these more thoroughly. Second, the trial court had no authority or jurisdiction to go back and resentence Mr. Qualls, hold another sentencing hearing. And third, I'm gonna go forward and distinguish the cases which the appellant cites.
Although, counsel, when you talk about a clerical error, we are talking about post-release control. We have a history We have a number of cases that look at post-release control very differently from any other type of error that the trial court may have engaged in.
Absolutely, and that's important to do because it does affect a substantive right. However, in this case, Mr. Qualls was advised on the record about post-release control, and as you can see in the decision by the Fourth District, there was actually oral discussion where the judge paused, allows Mr. Qualls to discuss with his attorney, did he understand post-release control? And then when asked, do you understand this, Mr. Qualls replied, yes, sir, I do.
He received a judgment entry that didn't contain it.
Correct. Right. The judgment entry, the purpose of a nunk-pro-tunk isn't to correct or modify what happened in the sentencing hearing. The purpose is to reflect accurately what happened on the record. What accurately happened on the record in this case was Mr. Qualls was advised about post-release control and did have his opportunity to discuss it with the attorney.
Although Ms. Fransman, if we take your position, would we not have to go back and modify some of the earlier cases?
No, I disagree.
It sounds as though your opposing counsel here has made an argument that we are talking about a situation for a limited time period that respects the precedent of this court, and then the decision that the General Assembly and that we made in Fisher to modify the problem for the future. But we are talking about a point in time that is very limited. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Your Honor, I would not agree that it would require overruling precedent. I don't agree that it would be changing precedent. The reason being, if you look at cases, one of the cases that sticks out is State versus Singleton. This is a case where, once again, the sentencing entry, they attempted to correct it. He was never advised of post-release control on the record. This wasn't, as a matter of fact, all of these cases cited, Simpkins, Jordan, there's an issue with either how post-release control was explained or it was not explained at all. I believe in oral arguments for Singleton, there was actually a discussion about nunk-pro-tunk being proper in this instance where he's advised in court, but it's not put in the sentencing entry. This case is clearly distinguishable from those three cases and the rest of our precedent, I believe.
Counsel, what would have happened had Mr. Qualls never petitioned for this correction?
That, Your Honor, I believe the error would not have been caught, to be honest. I believe
the error would not have caught. 33 years would pass, presuming he doesn't get out in 2035. And he wouldn't have any post-release control imposition upon him, correct?
Following the reasoning in Hernandez, it cannot be corrected after the sentence is complete. So had he completed the 33 years and was then paroled after the 33 years, that would be correct. There would be no post-release control that could be imposed.
It's really not to his benefit that anybody noticed this, is it?
It's not really for Mr. Qualls' benefit at all. As you stated earlier, he's been sentenced to the maximum. There will be no change in the sentence. At most, this benefits the state.
I'd sit down if I were you. I'm just kidding.
You have more to say, go right ahead. But
you came a long way from Meigs County. You got 15 minutes.
I did. I would just like to point out the reasoning in
we're happy you're here.
I'm happy to be here. Sort of. A little nervous. Point out the reasoning in Gauze. This is a 2009 case out of the First District. This is the case that the Fourth District based its reasoning on. The facts are almost identical. Advised the post-release control on the record, not in the written journal entry. The court actually issued a two-paragraph opinion saying that nunk-pro-tunk, that's what's proper. And, you know, the Fourth District cited this case and found no conflict with the same cases that I had gone through earlier, Singleton, Jordan, Simpkins. I could go into more detail, but these are your decisions, so you know the facts of those. You know, once again, with Singleton, he was not advised about post-release control or he was advised about it, but was not advised about the consequences of it. And then they corrected that in the journal entry. So what was in the journal entry did not reflect what happened on the record. In Jordan, there was no mention of post-release control. So by adding that into the sentencing entry, they took away a substantive right without informing the defendant at his sentencing hearing like he had a right to hear.
Counsel, do you agree with the counsel for the appellant that the subsequent cases we decided, and some of those issues could have been decided in this case, I guess, and then would have been tough luck, but the argument is they filed, we decided subsequent cases that say, you know, you just go back for a correction of mm-hmm. of the limited failure to put the post-release control in the entry. Do you agree with their argument that there is a window of opportunity there to have the full sentence imposed if we don't agree with your basic argument that the judge was fully authorized to use a non-protunct to accomplish this?
Do I agree that there's a window? You know, the sooner a journal entry is corrected, the better. Should there be a time window? You know, in this case, we're looking at, I believe it was 7 years, 6 or 7 years. Actually, 8. between the original sentencing and the issue of the nunk-pro-tunk. I don't know that to correct what was said on the record should ever have just a window or a limit. I mean, you can think of cases in other facets of law, such as divorce, other areas of law, where that can have a real impact if that window is closed. So I would not agree with that.
Okay.
For the reasons stated above, stated before, not above, I would ask this court to affirm the Fourth District, and that would be all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Mahosik?
Counsel, do you agree that all the previous cases where we've, where there has, the nunk-pro-tunk would not be a problem if the individual was informed of the post-release control?
No. To properly impose post-release controls, the two-step process. Moreover, this court has recognized that to add post-release control to a judgment entry, even if the defendant has been properly advised, requires a resentencing hearing because it's void from its inception.
What case are you referring to? Because I thought counsel was saying that we have never done that, or all the cases in the past can be distinguished because in all those other cases where there was a nunk-pro-tunk or where the individual did not get the notification, that was where the problem was.
If you look at the discussion in Bloomer regarding defendant Mossmeyer, it's also in Ketterer. It's also discussed, and I think it's paragraph 76 of Singleton, where it discusses how you can't validate something that's void from its inception. Moreover, 2929191, which was the General Assembly speaking, though, also recognized that before you can correct this judgment entry to add post-release control, there has to be a resentencing hearing, and that's in section C. Also, the window that counsel discussed, due process mandates that there can be no retroactive judicial decisions unless there's fair warning. As I previously mentioned, Singleton was the controlling case at the time that Mr. Qualls filed his motion for a resentencing hearing.
You may be right. I'm trying to claw through this in my own mind. On each one of these cases that we've had disputes regarding some whether or not the judge did it all right, we have a plethora of cases coming at us because you public defenders know you're raising this, so you raise it in all the others. So we've taken hold a bunch of cases. They may have been filed before we decided that case. Then we send them back for the application of that holding. Is that wrong to do that? Is that what you're saying, or am I not understanding your argument?
It's wrong to apply a judicial decision retroactively if there's not fair warning of the consequences of that judicial decision.
What is your authority on that statement?
It's in several cases from both the United States Supreme Court and the Ohio Supreme Court. I have, if you want, I can get the cases from my briefs. Would you like those?
That's all right.
Okay.
So what is the harm you're articulating? I guess back to the Chief Justice's earlier question of your opposing counsel. I'm not understanding. There's a maximum sentence here. Is your hope to go back to the trial court on the post-release control and argue that there should be a lesser sentence? Because to Justice Pfeiffer's point and your earlier statement, there is no harm to the defendant here.
There is harm to the defendant.
Okay, tell me what that is.
Mr. Qualls is entitled to have a de novo resentencing, and he can argue for a lower sentence, which the court can impose. He's also entitled to be present.
So he wants a second bite at the apple because he was told on the record what his sentence was. He was told on the record there would be post-release control. And so going through all of this is you want us to rule that there has to be de novo sentencing so he can have yet another opportunity to convince the judge of a lesser sentence.
Yes. He's entitled to the de novo resentencing hearing, so it should go back for that de novo resentencing. Moreover, he doesn't get to appeal from, without that de novo resentencing hearing and the imposition of post-release control, he can't appeal from that. As Carnell v. McCormick says,
he can't appeal from the post-release control.
Right.
But if he never had it to begin with, there's nothing to appeal because it's not to his detriment, as we discussed with your opposing counsel.
But if a typical nunk-pro-tunk judgment entry is being used to add post-release control to his sentence, then he's been foreclosed from appealing that.
How was it brought to the court's attention that there was no post-release control?
Mr. Qualls filed a motion before the trial court.
And isn't it because we had all of this language that said there was the sentence was completely void if there was a post-release control problem? I mean, in a sense, there were cases that actually said that. It started with the state appealing the issue of post-release control, and then this court said if there's an error there, it becomes a void sentence. Now we're at the stage where the defendants are using the same argument to their advantage, and this is where the problem is.
Yes, it's because it is void that it needs to go back for that resentencing. As Justice O'Donnell stated in Singleton, that you can't correct something that's void from its inception, and so it needs to go back for that.
Counsel, so coming back to the question of your client's motion is in before we decide, which case was it that is critical here that we decided?
All of the post-release control cases are critical here, but Singleton was the controlling case, which did not give fair warning that.
That's what I'm asking is, okay, which one are you saying didn't give fair warning? So if we render a decision that would be detrimental to the issue that criminal defendants are raising, we can't apply that retroactively. But if we arrive at a decision that is beneficial, we can send all those cases back for application of that outcome. All the cases that we're holding here, waiting on the decision in the lead case.
I don't really understand your question, but I think what I'm hearing is that the cases that are being held should be remanded back for a resentencing hearing. If they're being held for this case, for a full de novo resentencing hearing, rather than just the mere issuance of a nunk-pro-tunk judgment entry.
That's okay. Prior to December of 2010 when the statute cleared this problem up, so we have a very limited number of cases that are in the same posture as your client.
Yes. I think to rule otherwise, this court would have to overrule its precedent in Jordan from 2004, from Bezac from 2007, from Simpkins from 2008, from Bloomer from 2009, and for that
you
reason.
You also have to make 2929.191 retroactive.
No, 2929191 speaks in terms of a limited resentencing hearing, and we're stating that Mr. Qualls is entitled to the de novo resentencing hearing.
Well, I understand that, but for cases that are filed beyond the effective date of 2929.191, no matter when the error occurred, if they the appeals or the if the appeal is post December 2010, that is controlling 2929.191.
No, 2929.191 controls from July 11th, 2006 forward. And then for motions for resentencing, when there has been an error in the post-release control filed after March 2010, regardless of when the original offense occurred, are entitled to a limited resentencing under Fisher. And so this case would only apply to those where the motion was filed before July 11th, 2006, and the offense occurred before that date. So it's a very limited window. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Right. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.